if you're in your list, if you happen to be using older horses and you have the resources where you can go back and see races that are no longer on his past performance, you'll see these cycles continuing from his beginning, will you, probably?
Well, Tom's going to talk to you about a service where you get the, you take it every year, you'll have, you can also get the racing forms book for $25. Is it still $25? You get a lifetime, no way?
I don't know what you charge it for.
They have that, they used to have it, they have it now on a
microfiche.
But really, I tried that for a while. I bought that thing. It used to be $25 a month. I bought that, and you could go back to the horses. You got a little screen just projected it on. And I didn't really find out much more going back many more years than I did this last year.
Sorry to be blasphemous, but I throw my cards away after about 2 minutes.
I do too.
Yeah, I do too. I throw them away after about 2 minutes. I'm blasphemous here, but I'm here.
The remember the best statistic we have is that everything that happened in the last 10 years is semi meaningless. What happened in the last 10 days is far more important, preferably the last 5 days, and even better still, today's first race. This is why when people write me these six-page letters about how they're going to build me a wonderful database and all this stuff, and we can handicap them a database, we'd all be winners, I tell them, all you're going to do is be a winner in the database area. You're not going to be winning races because you're going to be relying on statistics that are not current. Doesn't matter, folks, that last year, Santa Anita, during the month of October, the Oak Tree meet, they all ran sustained for the first time in Oak Tree's history, and everybody was getting $40 mutuals when they used to get $6 mutuals, and all of us, it doesn't matter that it was sustained in February at Santa Anita, it's early in March. So if you're going on last month's statistics, you're losing races in March. You got to know what's happening today. That's why this is so wonderful, and Tom's way too. All you do is say, hey, this horse, the reason he didn't win is because he's a very horse and Santa Anita wasn't running early. Now put him in after March 5th and he's going to win the race. Be abreast of what's now, because that's where it's at. Quirin's book is marvelous. The way he derived his statistics is marvelous, but the statistics themselves are worthless because they're more than 3 months old, or a month old.
Doug, in projecting times, you know, obviously always try to go for the second call first to sit there for the PBS numbers and so on. Lately, I seem to be having difficulty where you get, say, a couple of horses from Bay Meadows or Golden Gate. It seems that their second fractions run faster than Santa Anita, but the final time is only one, you know, is actually one tick slower than the record.
Fine, then you know
doing,
that.
You're doing PBS numbers, you just take into account that one difference for the final speed, but what about that second course? Can you do the same thing? Or?
All you find, you know, like in the matchup manual, we said if you don't have all those facts, just take what you've got. If you see that the 45 is at Bay Meadows is equivalent to a 45.2 here, you say he's going to run a 45.2 here if you run a 45 up there, or whatever you find.
I've forgotten how to know that if it runs a 45,
well,
it runs
you got
45
one, two. Say, if you have a lot of charts and you do what Tom's going to show you how to do here pretty quick, then you have no problem. But say all you got is... one race from Bay Meadows, and this horse has run 5-6 furlong races up there, and you see, well, he averages about a 45. And you look over here, and you see, well, when these horses ran at Santa Anita, they ran 45.2. I mean, you take what you've got for information. That's why Michael says, and it's very true, project a little high. If you think it's 45... say 45.1 or even 45.
Right, because if you use that Bay Meadows horse as the projected pace, you're going to screw up your whole thing.
And before we move Tom on, let's look at the value of what a fraction tells you. The first fraction tells you horse's condition relative to its form cycle. Form cycle tells you how he usually runs a first fraction when he's running well. Say he runs it well when he's running good and he's on the lead or he's close to the lead, he likes to run in 22-1. Last couple of races, he ran a 23 or 22-4 for one reason or another. And the horse, the first fraction determines his, how he feels today. It doesn't matter whether he's the lowest class horse in the race or the highest class horse in the race, how he runs relative to his normal pattern in the first fraction tells you whether he's in condition. This is why Bob Hayburn wrote a whole book called Fast and Fit Horses, based on horses that ran fast early fractions or ran up to their standard, the first fraction. The first fraction, as Lafitte Pincai says, belongs to the horse, how it's feeling. Don't try to hold a horse back, especially in the first eighth of a mile, or you're liable to get thrown. Because that's what it wants to do. When that gate breaks open, that horse does what it wants to do. That's when it's charged up, it's full of emotion. That's you and you're caring and ready. That's when you... And anybody who tries it, when you're ready to go and you're raring to go, and somebody says, "Now calm down, George," you say, "Shut up." You know, that's the way the horse feels. Don't try to calm me down. That's the way I feel today. Sometimes they don't feel well, they want to shy away from the gate, they don't want to go at all. He's out of condition, he's not ready to go. The second fraction represents the horse's innate behavior pattern. The second fraction is innate, it is inherent. It doesn't matter how badly it feels or how well it feels. How it runs that second fraction is something you can count on more than anything else. Regardless of its class or condition, it's in. If it's a horse that likes to go make a move there, it may make a very feeble move. It may be, you know, so sore it can't do it, but it'll try. It'll show some life there.
In the innate habit patterns of, say, running?
Behavior pattern. That's innate. That's you. If you're down in the dumps and you're on your last breath, you will. If you're a scotch drinker, you'll have, before you go, you take one last gulp of scotch or whatever. If you're a lover, you'll find one more woman or man or whatever. Whatever it is that you innately want to do, no matter how badly you feel, you'll try to do it in the second fraction. I remember my second fraction.
At least you can remember.
The third fraction, for lack of a better term, is called the class fraction. And we're not talking about earnings as class or anything numerical. We're talking about a horse's heart, a horse's innate class, breeding or whatever. A horse will make an effort in the third fraction or will give up in the third fraction depending on its innate class. The reason 3-year-old filly races are so often won by horses with a runaway lead is that 3-year-old fillies lack that innate, very frequently, some of them, most of them, lack that innate competitive desire. If they're headed, they won't like to be headed. They'll try to make a move. Horses that are willing to give in, who are bullies in their own right, who won't try unless they've got a clear lead, have no place in the third fraction. The horse that likes to make a move at the end by on its own, because most jockeys will not beat a horse that's hopelessly out at the end. When a horse makes a move at the end, if he's far out of it, he usually, it's because that's its competitive spirit. Now, because the third fraction can be trained, and the first fraction can be trained. The trainer has more influence on the first and third fraction than any other. the conditions of the track have more to do with the third fraction than any other. Mud or rain or slop or whatever. The first fraction is the least important in the sense that you can look at it and see that horses change leads more often than the first fraction. Horse gets a lead and you think, oh, well, my horse is out in front. And they turn around and he's fourth. The value of a beaten length is minimal in the first fraction because of the velocity. Look on any chart, you'll see that it's a lot. It's 6.65, and they overcome 0.65 so easily in the first fraction that they can't overcome 0.15 in the third fraction. It's just easy to overcome because of the velocity they're going. So it should tell you that that your horse, if you got a horse in your stable, that a horse, that your early horses are kind of like bullies, and you only want to put them in a situation when they're going against horses who can't move on them. It's when they're going to win. When they're so fast, so early, that they can get out in front and nobody's ever going to intimidate them. See, intimidation in horses is supposedly when a horse meets a higher class horse, he feels he can come up behind him, or he meets him eyeball to eyeball and he gives up. I don't know, this is what people feel. Horses never revealed this to me, but when a horse has a big enough lead, he doesn't know he's outclassed. Hey, I'm all by myself. Nobody's intimidated. So if you get a horse with a big, you can always get a big enough lead, or the field is running against the day, that's why you should have three early horses. Get one who can build up a big enough lead, doesn't matter what class he is. Those are the kind who can go from 10,000 to 50,000 or to non-winners of three overnight, because nobody ever gets close enough to them to make them know that they're badly outclassed. So you should have a few of those, because that, depending on your track, there are tracks still in this country when that's all it takes. Any other questions? For Tom Hamilton, the inventor of the third fraction. I have one fellow who was a loser. I think I talked about him one day. He used to hang out in a special group of people at Santa Anita that prided themselves in losing him. Had a reward out for anybody that ever wanted with the Sartre methodology, all sorts of things. And this guy, I said, you're hanging out with a bunch of losers, and that's why you're losing. So why don't you get somewhere else? So I didn't hear from him for a while. I guess he went broke, and then he got a new bankroll. And he discovered, when he said, Tom Hamilton invented the third fraction, it turned me around. Colonel Bradley thought he invented the third fraction, but we corrected that. Tom has worked on this extensively. He's got a little... And so many of you, how many of you have written me? I know some of you have. I can see your faces. But that boy, since Tom Hamilton gave out that third fraction stuff, I've been really winning.
He's referring to himself as Colonel Hamilton.
Colonel Hamilton.
Colonel Hamilton Bradley.
I know a lot of you have written me. A lot of people have written me. And I know that it really helped J. Eliot to put it in perspective. Because he had J. Eliot's the greatest researcher we've got. He comes to me with this marvelous research, and I say, gee, that's marvelous. He says, well, what'd I do? But Jay finally found out what he did, and he's been winning very well, and I'm real proud of him. And Tom Hamilton has turned six people around who were pretty hopeless before just by revealing something to them that they already had but didn't know what to do about it. So, Tom, take over.
Jake, nobody's sick. I understand that, yeah. There's nothing to do with it. So you get the money out of it, that's all that counts.
Does everybody have one of these? It's a little three-page handout called FFBR and Key Races. Okay, that's the thing we're going to be working from. I'd like to kind of address a few things. Questions that have come up frequently, either by phone call or when I see people at seminars, and also I'd like to give you my perspective as to how I do things and how I use the final fraction energy ratings in my own handicapping to determine what's what I would call a key race. Because the theme of our seminar this weekend is basically just betting into races where we have a distinct advantage. For me, the final fraction energy ratings have proven to be the most effective for someone who does not hand. I'm not able to handicap every day. I subscribed to Tom's Horses to Watch list for over 2 years, and I could never. For me, that information was totally. I am not able to look back in files. So, my position on handicapping is I'd like to take everything out of the racing form today. That is the file that I use. And my own handicapping has developed to a point now where my final fraction energy ratings, I'm actually able to see where horses fit into races where they did not fit last time out. And we'll talk a little bit about that. The race that we're going to talk about specifically demonstrates two things about adjusting horses and perhaps equalizing distances. And those are the biggest questions that come up. I personally I don't feel as though I adjust a final fraction energy rating at all. All I'm able to do at this point is recognize that, for instance, horses that run 6.5 furlongs will have a higher final fraction energy rating than horses that run at 6. The same thing is true at 7 furlongs. Horses that run 9 furlongs will have a higher final fraction energy rating than horses that have run at 8.5, and 8.5 will be higher than 8. And there's certain reasons why this occurs, and I don't have a rule of thumb as to how much I adjust each horse. I let the horse adjust himself, and let me explain that. The horse that I'd like to talk about mostly today is Mr. Bowles in this race. And I noticed we're going to start at the bottom of his past performances. And 3 races up from his past performances, he gets an 86 at six furlongs at Santa Anita back in November. And when I look at that, and I look at his last race, which was also at 6 furlongs at Santa Anita, the difference is 6 points. One, he gets an 86, and one, he gets an 80. But because he's an early speed horse, that 5th of November race, the first quarter time was 21-3. His last race was 21-2. That difference is only 1/5 of a second, but that cost him 2 units of energy at the end of the race. His second was 45-3, and his last race was 45-2 under pressure. 44-2, excuse me. So that's an additional 1/5 of a second, so that's 4. Also, the track was 5 points slower in the track variant. So I don't know what that means. I just know that it was a little bit slower that day. So I don't really consider that 80 to be a bad rating, especially in this race. He ran against a very fast pace. He hung in tough. He had the lead at the top of the stretch. And I happen to know a little bit about the race because I bet the winner that day, Tenacious Tom. But there were 5 early speed horses in that race, and they all had to have the lead. And as they turned for home, what we perceive as the top of the stretch, which really is not, according to the race chart, there was 5 of them across the track. And he hung in the best of those 5. All the closers just ran right by him in the stretch because they just gave it up. But by knowing that 1/5 of a second in the first quarter will cost him 2 at the end, I mean, I don't have to make an adjustment to that and say, well, let's see, that's 80 plus 2 is 82. plus two more for the half mile, that's 84. I just say that he's in good form. That's all I derive from that 80 rating. And that's also going to be the target that I'm going to be shooting at. I said Mr. Bowles is my pace setter in this race. The reason is because four out of the six races he's had the lead at the first and second call in the race. Now, I projected the pace at the top of the page at 22, 44, and 3, and the final time of 1:22 and 2. The reason I projected a 22 opening quarter as opposed to a 21 and 2 is because at 7 furlongs they tend to lope. And the only 7 furlong race that Mr. Bowles ran in, he was behind at 22 and 1. He did not break cleanly that day. One of the two times in his past performance was when he didn't. But I felt that 22 was a pretty comfortable quarter for him. I also felt that 44 and 3 would be a very comfortable half mile because it's on the straightaway. And also, if you look at the other horse that figures to be fairly close to lead, Sarrelstown, he was running against the 44 and 3 pace. So I figured between the two of them, 44 and 3 was pretty likely. The one thing, if you don't get anything else out of what I say to you today, I want you to understand that when you see a rating like an 88 on 7 furlongs when the horse lost 6.5 lengths in the stretch, that, in my opinion, this horse was the best closer in this race, which is kind of contrary to what I believed when I first started this.
Sorry, tell which one was that?
On the 7 furlong race for Mr. Bulge.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
He lost 6.5 lengths in the stretch. Mm-hmm. His rating out of that race is an 88. And I felt, when I looked at that, and I looked at Sarrelstown, and I looked at Shady Pine, which were really the three main contenders in this race, I felt that Mr. Bowles was the best closer. Now, this is really important because when we look at the second page, there's a horse called El Gorion. And he's what the crowd or the public that we're betting against typically calls a good closer. And before I started looking at these final fractions, I would say that this horse is perfectly matched to run against a 44 and 3 pace. He ran against a 44 and 2 last time and gained 6 and a quarter lengths.